It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to Let's Talk. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I've got a great show for you today. Some might say it's a little crazy, but I got to be honest, I'm going to do what I need to do. I need to figure out some things. I want to be educated. I want to educate others about certain topics. And no matter how controversial or uncomfortable the subject is, I want to get people on who can talk to me who know what the hell they're talking about, right? And I hope my guys are listening, because I'm going to talk today about something that most men typically don't know about women. And I'm not talking about the emotional aspect of women. I've given up on trying to figure that out a long time ago. Most of us will never know what makes women think and feel the way that they do. What I'm talking about, though, is something that we should know, something that a lot of heterosexual men, myself included, in their lifetime have spent a lot of time, money, and effort, let's be honest, trying to get next to, and that is the vagina. And no, I'm not going to have a conversation about what stimulates one or arouses one, because being honest, I mean, no two women are the same. So that makes it a much larger conversation and not one for today. But what I am going to talk about today, though, when referencing the vagina, is something that is universal to all women, and that is vaginal health. So I'm going to have a clinical conversation with the new president of the National Medical Association and OBGYN specialist, Dr. Yolanda Lawson. And I can't wait to pick her brain, because I've got some man questions for her. You know what I mean? Also, we've obviously got the Petty here. He's here with us every single weekend, and he's got a lot to talk about. It is a hot season. The football season is upon us. He's got a lot to talk about with that. The Orioles are flying high and very hot. He's got a lot to talk about that. And boxing has really gotten hot over the last 6 months. He's got a lot to talk about that, so I can't wait to talk to him. But first, you've got me, and I'm going to do what I like to do best and what I always do every Sunday, and that's fill you in on the news that has gone on in the last past week. So look, I'm feeling great. I hope you're feeling great. I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. Back in 2017, as a result partly of the shame and scandal of the BPD's gun task force, a federal judge signed a Baltimore police consent decree mandating police reform. And one of the things within that decree is an agreement that the Baltimore cops would spend a certain amount of time each day outside of their patrol cars on foot patrolling communities, which is what they used to do back in the day, which helped them to get to know the people within the communities that they serve. Now, over time, however, that practice has gone by the wayside, and police who used to be like Officer Friendly that I grew up with slowly but surely became a militarized gang within itself that is completely out of touch with the communities within our city. Well, the feds are paying attention, and a new report claims that the Baltimore City Police Department is falling short of its federal consent decree goals, and one of the tenets, as I mentioned, of the decree requires officers to get out of their patrol cars and engage with the public. Now, the BPD is saying that they want to engage with the public and they want to be out of their patrol cars, but they are falling short because of chronic staffing shortages. Residents of the city, like Danita Singletary, are voicing their concerns, saying that there is not enough engagement between city residents and police officers, and therefore the police are strangers to the citizens, and more dangerously, the citizens are strangers to the police.
I would like to see officers engage. If they see elderly people that need some help, help the elderly people if they can, you know, give the kids good advice.
The BPD's goal is to have every officer spend at least 40% of their time on foot patrol and responding to citizens' quality of life concerns. The report acknowledges, though, that a chronic staffing shortage makes that difficult to do so. The report also cited the fact that police spend much of their time responding to emergencies. Fox 45 is reporting that Judge Lydia K. Grigsby did grant a request from Marilyn Mosby's attorneys to extend the filing deadline for their next argument concerning their request to move her trial out of Baltimore. In the government's latest filing, prosecutors attacked defense research by Dr. Brian Edelman that the defense said shows the Baltimore area is saturated with negative media coverage and that the Southern Division of the District of Maryland is less predisposed to judge Marilyn Mosby's guilt. Mosby's attorneys said that they need more time to consult with Dr. Edelman because of his schedule. And on Wednesday, during a town hall meeting ahead of Acting Baltimore Police Commissioner Richard Worley's confirmation, Mayor Brandon Scott got into a back and forth with a woman who asked questions about safe streets. The woman initially asked Acting Commissioner Worley how the police department could work with Safe Streets, Baltimore's flagship gun violence prevention program, to make Charm City safer. But before Worley had the chance to respond, Mayor Scott answered the question.
We have to understand that there's always transparency with these programs. The monies that we spend on Safe Streets is out there for anybody to see. But what we are not going to do is allow these right-wing people to come in and try to tear down folks who have changed their life and want to make their neighborhood a better place.
I reject that characterization. None of us wants anyone to be hurt, harmed, certainly not killed or murdered,
absolutely,
whether it's Safe Streets or anyone else. I'm speaking, again, as a taxpayer, not a right-wing media person.
Oh, not you. You know what I'm talking
about. I don't represent any media any media company or corporation. I do represent, or at least personally represent, a taxpayer, a homeowner, a citizen, and I think we have the right to understand and know better where and how our money is spent.
Now, that exchange went on a little bit longer, but in response, Mayor Scott said that the nonprofits are required to show how the organizations spend money, and there is some truth to the mayor's statement, but some truth. The 990 that is required is not an official audit of what the program is all about and where the money is spent. It is a snapshot and a generalization of where the money is spent, but it doesn't account for every dollar, as taxpayer watchdog Davis Williams reminds us.
A 990 is required by the IRS and is a good snapshot of the organization. It doesn't tell the whole story. And that's why we should be suspect of money going through nonprofits, is because their finances are hidden in a 990. And there's a delayed process for getting the financial information from a nonprofit.
And so while the mayor did speak a half-truth, there is really no micro detail to what any nonprofit, including Safe Streets, is spending its money on. And on the national front, there's a story that a lot of people have not heard about that's circulating about a young man named Travis King. Now, Travis King is a U.S. soldier who has defected or crossed the line into North Korea. Some say trying to elude U.S. military discipline that was waiting for him back in the States, to which he was headed for assaulting a South Korean citizen and being in a South Korean detention center for 50 days. It's a very strange and it's a very concerning story, and puts another huge strain on relations between the U.S. and North Korea, as if we need it anymore, after all of the things that have gone on with our nuclear talks and threats during the Trump administration. Here is another situation where North Korea has an opportunity to use this private, this U.S. black soldier, as a pawn to strengthen its rhetoric and propaganda in its country against the U.S. So the story goes something like this. The day before he crossed into Korea, Travis King was supposed to board a flight to Texas, where he was to face disciplinary procedures. But after Army escorts released him at a security checkpoint at Incheon International Airport near Seoul, Korea, King left the airport on his own. He then, according to the Army, joined a civilian tour of the Joint Security Area. It's a small collection of buildings that run about 150 miles along the demilitarized zone, known as the DMZ. And that has separated North and South Korea since the end of the Korean War. It's been there and manned by U.S. soldiers for a very long time. Now, there is no physical barrier inside the JSA, and U.S. officials said that after bolting over the demarcation line, delineating the border, King tried to enter a North Korean facility, but the door was locked. He then ran around to the back of the building, at which point he was hurried into a van and driven away by North Korean guards. Now, that on its face is unprecedented and very strange, but what's even more strange is what came out in the news on Wednesday, I believe it was. Yeah, on Wednesday, the state-run North Korean Central News Agency claimed that King, who is black, expressed his willingness to seek refuge in North Korea or a third country because he harbored ill feelings against inhumane maltreatment and racial discrimination within the U.S. Army. A U.S. defense official said that Washington cannot verify these alleged comments, and that they remain focused on his safe return, and that the Defense Department's priority is to bring Private King home, and that they are working through all available channels to achieve that outcome. The sad irony in this entire situation is that Travis King may have been trying to just get out of facing U.S. military discipline for the trouble that he got into in South Korea, which may have only been possible discharge and a plane ticket back home. But at this point, the young brother may have now found himself in a situation where the entirety of his country cannot now get him out of the trouble that he finds himself in. Let us not forget, a few short years ago, the last U.S. citizen to be released from North Korean custody after being held for 7 months for having been accused of stealing a North Korean poster was taken into North Korean custody healthy and young, and sent back home to his family 17 months later in a coma, and died shortly after he got back onto U.S. soil. And to this day, there has been no official explanation as to what happened to him in North Korean custody that caused either his coma or his death. So sadly, our young brother Travis King may found himself in a situation where, in trying to avoid the frying pan, he jumped right into the fire. All right, we're going to leave the news and we're going to shift gears and we're going to talk to my guest as soon as we come back from this break. So stay tuned. We'll be back to Let's Talk right after this.
Sean E. Merriman presents An Evening with Kiki Wyatt.
Kiki Wyatt. We'll be loving to the break of the day.
Her special guest, Keith Washington. And the sultry Miss Crystal F. Saturday, September 23rd, 6 p.m. at the James Weldon Auditorium at Coppin State University. Get your tickets at SeanEMerriman.com. This is a Ticketmaster event.
All right, welcome back to Let's Talk. And today my guest is the new president of the National Medical Association and a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. She is the founder of Made Well OBGYN in Dallas, Texas, and an associate attending at Baylor University Medical Center. She is also the medical director of Abounding Prosperity, a community-based organization that addresses HIV disparities in target Black communities. So, like I said before, when I want to know something, when I want to talk about a subject, I try to find the most qualified people to discuss this topic with, someone that will give me the right answers, the proper information so that you and I together can learn something. So I think I got the right person today. In fact, I know I have the right person today. And so I'm going to hit her over the head with some questions that men are curious about when it comes to the vagina. It's going to be clinical. It's not going to be any ratchet or in the gutter stuff. But at the same time, it's probably not appropriate for kids. I would say 17, 18 is old enough to listen. So, you know, make the decision for yourself as parents. Also, I'm going to talk to the good doctor about dementia and why Baltimore is listed by the World Health Organization as having one of the highest dementia and Alzheimer's populations in the country. Need to know why that is. So we're going to talk to her about that as well. So buckle up and get ready. And right now, please help me welcome to 1500 Radio and Let's Talk, Dr. Yolanda Lawson. All right, 1500 family, please help me welcome to Let's Talk the new president of the National Medical Association, Dr. Yolanda Lawson. Good morning, Dr. Lawson. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I am so well. Thank you for being here with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely. Listen, you're going to help me shed some light on some things that not only am I curious about, but a lot of guys, and I'm sure some women are curious about, but most guys like me, we have, you know, we don't really have a whole lot of an idea of what women are talking about when they talk about these things. So you're going to help me with those today, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, first of all, president of the National Medical Association, that's a big deal. Like, how are you selected into that position?
So it is an elected position.
Okay.
I served at every level, from my local level to my state level, regional. So it's a work in progress, but it's an elected position. And to lead the Black doctors and help lead advocacy for Black patients in this country.
Okay. Now, when you say Black doctors, so this is a Black organization?
Yes. Yeah, so historically, Black physicians were not allowed into the American Medical Association. So the National Medical Association was born out of a need for us to have a platform for our educational advances and for what you needed to get hospital privileges, right?
Right.
And so it was born out of the need for African-American physicians to have a platform and a place for that.
Wow. So even, that's crazy. So now are Black doctors now welcomed into the American Medical Association?
Yes, Black doctors are welcome into the American Medical Association. In the late 80s, the president of the AMA came to the National Medical Association and a public apology was provided to the Black doctors. And so there are now reconciliation acts still going on to this day. As you can imagine, there was a lot of pain associated with those discriminatory acts in the past.
Okay. So now are white members welcome into the National Medical Association?
Of course.
Okay.
Anyone who is in this fight to eliminate healthcare disparities is welcome into the National Medical Association.
Well, that's what's crazy to me, that there is still, I guess, a need for both. Like I would assume, just like, you know, like baseball, like things would I don't know, integrate, and that there wouldn't be a need for both, or there wouldn't still be a national and an American. You know, you guys are trying to, I guess, have the same success in taking care of medical issues. So it's kind of interesting to me. But it is a big deal. And obviously with this office that you hold now comes huge responsibility. So can you tell me the kinds of things or issues that you'll be tackling and managing in the position?
Absolutely. So I'll just highlight a few things. One is the Black Women's Health Agenda. And so I am an OBGYN by specialty. I practice also in Texas. And so maternal and reproductive health have been cornerstone to my career and history. And so that's one of my bucket areas. Okay. Also within that, cardiovascular disease, as you understand, leading cause of death in this country for all folks, but definitely when you began to discuss Black folks and you look at Black women are some of the most hypertensive beings on the planet.
Wow.
And then lastly, HIV. When you look at HIV is a fifth leading cause of death in Black women. And so Black women also have some of the highest rates of new HIV infections. So some of these topics are within my Black women's health agenda. Also digital health. And so we keep hearing about digital innovation and AI and how it's supposed to close these disparity gaps and help us, right?
Right.
I want to ensure that these innovations are not widening the disparity gap, but actually closing those inequalities.
Okay.
And then lastly, the healthcare workforce, as you, I'm sure everyone heard, you probably have explored this over the past few years. You heard about burnout in physicians and
yes.
especially after COVID.
Yes.
And I personally have lost colleagues who committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
And so when you hear that white doctors are burned out, what do you think is happening to our Black healthcare providers, physicians,
right.
nurses, pharmacists, all of that within the bucket?
I have a lot of work to do, Brian.
Yeah,
you do. Yeah, you do. But have you found any or are you finding any pushback being a Black woman and having this title as president?
So I'm 2 weeks in. I don't think that I can say within this title yet I've experienced any pushback. I think that there have been some very strong women who have paved the way before me, and I appreciate and respect all of the work that has been done ahead of me.
Right.
But as a whole in Black women, you know, if you think about the past 5 years, remember on the airline flight, the Black female doctor
yeah,
who tried
I do.
To help resuscitate a patient and being questioned about being a doctor.
Yep.
One of my colleagues walked into a patient's room. She had her name with the letters MD on her white coat. And the white male patient asked her, oh, does that mean you're from Maryland? And so you're right. We envision... Right. When you think about who a doctor is. And so I am proud to step into this role and represent as a Black woman in this country and let people see my face and what that's associated with.
That is awesome. So at what age did you start becoming interested in medicine, but in particular gynecology? What got you interested in medicine and gynecology?
So I became interested in medicine in 10th grade. I remember taking physics, and I know that sounds strange, but physics, and I just began to fall in love with the life sciences. So I'm actually a zoology major, right?
Right.
So life sciences interested me. And so I knew by 10th grade I was going to pursue medicine. I went to medical school, and there were two things I was not going to do. I was not going to do pediatrics and OB. Those were two things I was not going to do. Okay.
Okay.
But again, I come from a family. I was the first doctor in my family, and it had to do with exposures. And so once I got into medical school and I got exposed, I fell in love with women's health.
Okay.
Women's health was it for me, and I knew it 100%.
Interesting. Interesting. Huh.
So it was a little bit of a curvy road, but you know.
Yeah, a little bit.
To you. Yes, things become revealed to you.
Well, listen, it's been well documented, kind of like you mentioned before, that healthcare for Black people in this country have been historically far less adequate or available than for white people in the country. Is that still a huge disparity gap in 2023, or has it gotten better? Is it getting better?
As you know, there are still huge disparity gaps. We can start with, you know, I just alluded to HIV. HIV has now become a disease mostly in the South, and mostly those disparities are greatest between Black folks, not only in disease acquisition, access to PrEP therapy, access to treatment. I'm an OBGYN. You've heard a lot around maternal mortality.
Right.
How Black women three times as likely to die. You could be well off, live in the suburbs, college educated. Those women are five times as likely to die as a Black woman. So even in that instance, right, where we hear this argument about the socioeconomic status, that's an instance where that doesn't even matter, right?
Right.
And so you look across many disease states. We're starting an initiative now around the mortality rate or the death rate of Blacks from cancer. You look at Black men, the death rates from prostate cancer. We look at colorectal cancer, breast cancer, Black women die more. And so all of these things, tremendous burdens on our community. So absolutely, Brian, there are still healthcare disparities, and we're working to address those daily.
Tell me about, because I know you know, you're the director of Abounding Prosperity, correct? And that addresses HIV disparities in the Black communities,
yes.
if I'm correct, right? What are you doing, or what is your foundation doing? What are you doing to help that? Like, how do you address it? Like, what do you do?
Absolutely. You've done your research on me. So, yeah, Abounding Prosperity is a community-based organization here in Dallas, Texas. It's located in a medical desert or a medically underserved area. Many of our clients may be unfunded or not being uninsured. We knew that there was a gap. Previously, I'd started an HIV testing initiative that was faith-based in a zip code that had one of the highest rates of HIV in the Metroplex here. And so much of that work is about access, not only access to treatment, access to prevention methods like such as PrEP, you heard me talk about. We deliver transgendered care, and it's all about access and care. And how do these communities that are underserved, you keep hearing me say this underserved
word,
we get healthcare back into those communities?
Well, there are medical deserts in Black communities, and I think that's a huge issue. They talk about food deserts, which is true. But they're medical deserts also, and oftentimes Black folks don't have, you know, they don't have the transportation. So if you're going into the communities, I mean, that's incredibly helpful, incredibly helpful.
It is absolutely. And so one of my passions is around access to care. I opened a birth center several years ago in a community. And so you think back historically, healthcare was in the community, right?
Right.
Now we are used to or accustomed to these large major centers or university centers where all the doctor's offices and the healthcare is in a center. And so you're right, there was something to it where healthcare and the doctor was in the community. I think back to the Cosby Show.
Right.
You remember he would go next door?
Had it in his basement. Yes, he did.
Right, in the basement.
In his basement, absolutely.
You remember that. So when I opened I could just remember him going next door, working and coming home.
Right.
Going back, being in the community.
Well, what's weird is when things were more segregated, and I've asked a couple of my guests this, who are activists within the Black community and older, and like my grandfather told me, he says he didn't know if integration was something that helped or hurt us more, because when things were more segregated, we were almost self-sufficient. We had teachers, we had doctors, we had all these things within our communities that we could depend on, and they were a phone call away. But it doesn't seem to be the case anymore. It's gotten a lot more difficult for us to get the care that we need.
It has. One of my mentors says the exact same thing. When we were self-sufficient, we relied on one another. And so you look at these things and these systemic and these large institutional structures, and you look at systemic racism. So absolutely, did you say that was your grandfather that said that?
Yes, yes.
Yes, your grandfather was a wise man. And so you think about this. My mother was just having this discussion with me the other day around she went to a segregated high school.
Right.
And what that was like, having teachers who were personally vested in your education, and you felt that through and through.
Exactly. Now, are you trying to incorporate that same kind of personal care within your practice, where you kind of know who you're dealing with?
I have always had that approach. I have always had that approach. You know, I realize being a doctor, I'm part of a system, right?
Right.
I've worked in healthcare systems. And so when Black patients interface with those systems, I realize I'm a part of that system. I think that us in this country trying to get to racially concordant care, and you know what that is, Brian? That's when Black or like people are taking care of like. We know that studies have shown that when Black patients can get better outcomes with Black doctors, but you also know the gap and the disparity in the number of Black doctors, right? There's a larger Black population than Black doctors.
Absolutely.
So how do we get there? And so I've always had that approach, and always I feel many of my colleagues, that burden is on our shoulders. We have to do more for our patients. I have to almost overcompensate to ensure the care that they need. They get the care that they need.
You know, and I don't know if this is true, but I have heard, and I kind of want to know, are more C-sections performed on Black women, and are they unnecessarily done than there are on white women?
Brian.
I'm sorry.
That can be the case. Yes.
Okay.
That can definitely be the case. It can be multifactorial, right?
Okay.
You can look at, so I'll give an example. Black women, for instance, we have higher rates of preterm birth.
Okay.
Right? And so preterm birth is a complication of pregnancy. And so when you're thinking about preterm birth in itself, sometimes those babies aren't positioned properly. So in itself, with that being a complication of pregnancy, that could put you at a higher risk for cesarean. So there are just intricacies and nuances there that can impact the C-section rate among Black women.
Okay.
And much of it has to do with having higher risk pregnancies. And then most commonly, and what I love to talk about, is the higher age women are getting pregnant now, right?
Right.
So women are delaying childbirth many times. And with delayed childbirth, the older you are, the more risk you have for complications such as preeclampsia and hypertension, and twins even are high. So higher risk at twins the longer you wait to get pregnant. So all of these are nuances.
Okay. All right. You know, you hear things and you don't know if it's fact-based or if it's just conspiracy. And I've heard that, and I heard a long time ago, and I always wanted to know if that is in fact was the case. So there are a couple of things. You know, when I mentioned to people that I was going to interview you today, they had a couple of questions. It was mostly men. All right.
Okay.
So help me out here, because we want to know. All right. One of the things is in regards to menopause and hot flashes. Is there anything that men can do to help women when they're going through hot flashes, and what causes it?
Okay. I love that question. So what causes menopause? I'm going to start there first. So when a girl is born, we're born with so many eggs, right? From the ovaries. Remember that seventh grade health class.
Right.
So you're born with so many eggs. All menopause is once your eggs are gone, then your ovaries basically fail. So it's ovarian failure is what menopause is by definition. The ovaries won't produce eggs anymore. That's why menstruation stops. And all of that creates the hot flashes and the vasomotor symptoms and the night sweats, right?
Okay.
And so it is a natural phenomenon. It is, I don't look at it as a disease state. I ask women to embrace the time. It is a change. And that's why they always called it, right? The change. You're going through the change.
Right.
And so
right.
It is a change. And I think men can be supportive.
Okay.
Right. I tell men all the time, you know, when it comes to the sweating, or she needs to have the fan on, she needs
right.
that. AC Lord, just get your blanket, but don't say anything,
okay.
Right? And so
okay.
Support is needed because, you know, when you're hot, and so you hear about women being irritable, right? That's a common thing. And so many times, if you think about even a child, when you don't sleep well, you're irritable. And so the sleep disturbances because of becoming hot at night are very common. And so we think much of the irritability comes from purely just not sleeping
well.
Lack
of sleep. Okay, that makes sense. And what are the stages of menopause? Like there's menopause, perimenopause, like post, like what are the stages?
Right. So when we are in our child rearing years, from the time we go through puberty, a woman is premenopausal. You're premenopausal all through your teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever. The average age of menopause in the United States is around 51 and a half to 52 years age. And so when you're around the time of menopause, the Latin root of peri is around that. So it could be your late 40s, your perimenopause.
Okay.
Right. So women just may only demonstrate some hot flashes. Their cycles may be a little bit irregular, but it takes usually about a 5-year process to get to menopause.
Oof.
So you become then once you get to menopause, then you're considered postmenopausal. And that means you haven't had menstrual cycles for at least a year, right?
Okay.
Most people will see their doctor by then because of the hot flashes or what have you. There are some women who have very little symptoms, and there are some women who have more than others, right?
Okay.
But it's usually about a 5-year process. You don't just wake up one day and you're in menopause. That would be an ugly trick, right?
That would be.
You're right. Mother Nature usually guides you through it. So it's a process. Again, that's why it's called the change.
Okay, now here's another one, okay? And it's a very sensitive concern that affects women and ultimately affects her partner, as in us.
Okay.
Right? Okay. It's vaginal odor. What are the primary causes and remedies or preventive care for that? And what can men do? What can we do to help lessen those things?
So if there's one thing folks should walk away with, a vaginal odor is not normal. And if you have one, please see a healthcare professional, because many times people seek over-the-counter methods, right?
Okay.
So I encourage folks, if it is the man and he notices it, he says something to you. I often ask the patients, has he noticed it? And so if you have that, please seek care for it first, because the first thing everyone's going to be concerned about, of course, is some type of infection. And so we want to control if it's sexually transmitted or not. We want to discern that. Not all causes of vaginal odor are sexually transmitted, but you want to make sure it's not, because we want to control disease states for men and for women, right?
Right.
And then secondly, again, get testing to see what it actually is. Too many times people presume, and people are pursuing over-the-counter methods, boric acid and all these other things that are sold over-the-counter, douches, and which can aggravate the problem. You may get temporary relief, but it will come back.
Okay.
And so we do not recommend those things. So it's so important to understand, because you can complicate your diagnostic picture by not seeking care earlier and using these other things to mask your condition.
Are there, how can I ask this question? Are there differences in men and women to the point where you could be, I guess, in a relationship with someone who's throwing your pH off as a woman? Like, how do you remedy that? Because I hear that pH balance is such an important ingredient to having a healthy vagina. So is it something where a man can actually be throwing that off by like soaps he's using or lotions he's using? Like, is that a thing?
So first I want to clarify, usually the soaps and the lotions are not the culprit.
Okay.
If you have some type of infection, you can then have a pH balance change. We know infection will create a pH balance change. There are things that you can do, of course, that can affect your pH balance. You just heard me say douching, probably the most common. Right?
Okay.
There are bacteria everywhere on the body and the skin. You can't control that. There are good bacteria and bad bacteria in the vagina. The vagina is an open orifice, just like your mouth is.
Right?
An open orifice. We all know there are bacteria in our mouth. Right?
Right.
And so when you dish and you wash out, right, the bad bacteria, you also wash out the good bacteria, and you create changes in pH balance, and then you can allow the bad bacteria to take over, hence the odor and bacterial vaginosis and all these other conditions, right?
Right.
And so many times women may say, oh, it's soap, I can't use, you know, soap with fragrance and things like that. Well, typically you've been using soap probably your whole life. Your mother bathed you in soap, things like that. So there can be harsher soaps. I don't advise, but typically there can just be something underlying. Typically, it's not that soap is necessarily causing it.
Okay.
But I know that that is a thought that and a myth that is propagated all the time.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I'm very, very aware.
Okay.
And so in regards to men, yes, men can have non-sexually transmitted infections also. So typically, I'll give you an example. When it could end up, and it may not be diagnosed until fertility. I'm looking at a gentleman's semen analysis, and I'll see things, cells that fight bacteria. He may not have had any symptoms at all. His partner may be the person who presents with recurring vaginal infections and odor, right?
Okay, I got you.
And so, yeah, it can be stemmed from a man. So typically, you know, getting him treatment, using condoms for a while to allow both reproductive systems to recover is very important.
So men can be the carrier of something that they have no idea they have, and women become the incubator of that because it's inside, well, and it's moist.
That's an interesting word, incubator. It has to do with our anatomy. Again, the inside of the vagina is like the inside of your mouth. There is no skin layer. The man's anatomy, because the penis has skin, right?
Right.
That's why women are always more susceptible. It has to do purely based with our anatomic structures.
Okay. Well, on that same subject, tell me about HPV, and do you believe that young women should get the HPV vaccine?
Yes, I'm so glad, because, again, here we are talking about anatomic structures and HPV. So that's why it's much easier for a man to transfer HPV to a woman than a woman to a man, just, again, based on the skin and mucosal membrane anatomy of the vagina versus the penis. I do believe in the HPV vaccine. When you look at cervical cancer rates now, again, cervical cancer rates are higher in Black women.
Okay.
But we have tools such as the HPV vaccine that not only can protect you against cervical and vaginal cancer. People forget there are things such as vaginal cancer, vulvar cancer, the skin on the outside of a woman. But even for men, esophageal cancer, rectal cancer. So I when there are tools and things that we can use to cut down these disparities, cut down disease, reduce people dying, then yes.
Okay.
We want to advocate for that.
Okay.
And especially now, remember, before we could only give you the vaccine up until you were 26 years of age. And now we expanded the age range. We waited on the research and the studies to come out. And so I remember when it first came out, Brian, I had men calling my office. People wanted it. And so it's an important thing that now we are vaccinating both men and women.
Oh, wow.
HPV causes penile cancer. It is the cause of cancer of the penis, and so it's an important thing for men's health also.
Now, is there a certain age that you don't need it, or you just, you know what I mean? Are you, but I think younger people are more susceptible than older. Is a cutoff 45 or 50 or 50? Like, what is the cutoff, or is there one?
The cutoff is 40.
Okay.
And yes, young women and girls definitely can be more susceptible. Women are, as I stated, more susceptible. The immune system changes. So that's why we would tell people, if you got HPV, if you contracted HPV and you were 30 years or older, the likelihood of it resolving was very high. It would not. You'd likely have it, right?
Okay.
If you're younger and you get HPV, it can act as a transient infection sometimes, right? If you're in your early 20s, late teens, it may go away. There is a chance it may go away. But if you're 30, we don't consider that old, but the immune system is always changing per our age.
Okay. I dated someone that had a problem with fibroids, and it really did affect our physical intimacy. What are fibroids, and is there any truth that black women are more susceptible to getting them than white women, and why?
Yeah, absolutely. So black women are more susceptible. So women of African descent, it has to do with our African heritage. So women of African descent, but however, Asian women, Caucasian women, any woman can get fibroids. It's just more common in women of African descent. Fibroids are tumors of the uterus. So the uterus is, or the womb, right, is a organ made of muscle. And fibroids are typically tumors made of muscle. Okay. So I just first want to ground and root every people. Fibroids grow from the uterus because people think the ovaries and, you know, the structures of the woman's reproductive system can be confusing to folks. So they are tumors that grow from the uterus. Most commonly they cause menstrual issues or bleeding, but they also can cause pain, right. Back pain. Pain with intercourse, right. But very common. But there are treatments available. Not always surgery is needed. It's distinctly dependent on where the fibroids are. So that's why an assessment with a gynecologist is so important when you have those.
Yeah, it. I think a lot of men are lost in that women become emotional, and they become very insecure. It's very difficult emotionally for women when they're going through this, especially when it causes pain and bleeding, because guys are impatient. And I think the biggest thing that I learned from it is to be patient and be empathetic, because it's a thing that men never have to go through. And I didn't know anything about it until I experienced it with this person.
All right. I would love for you to say that again. Be patient and what? What else?
Empathetic.
Be empathetic. There you go. Be patient, be empathetic, because for a woman for childbearing purposes and for her future reproduction. And so fibroids don't always preclude that. Again, it's very important to understand with your physician where, you know, the location, the size of the fibroids, a full assessment needs to be done. Right. Sometimes we do nothing about them. They could be small and asymptomatic. It could be years before a woman even knows she has them. But, of course, it can be a very sensitive issue for women to deal with and manage.
Certainly was. I learned the hard way because I wasn't patient and I wasn't empathetic. So I had to learn that. So full disclosure.
As long as you learn.
I learned. All right, so let's switch gears a bit, okay? I want to talk about something that came out recently. And according to the CDC, about 14% of black people in the country over the age of 65 have Alzheimer's, compared to only 10% of white people. Why is that the case?
So this is something we are actually exploring within the organization. We're looking not only at the increased risk of Alzheimer's. So one of the issues that we have, again, is the reluctance of black people to enroll in clinical trials and clinical research so we can gain more insights and answers around these types of things. So we know that, again, you and I started out this conversation talking about healthcare disparities, mm-hmm. right? Okay. This is another area where we see that disparity with black people. It could be some due to other comorbidities. We know that hypertension and other disease states can contribute to your dementia risk, right?
Right.
We know that lifestyle can contribute to your dementia risk. Family history, genetics, so all these interplay, but there's definitely more push to get more black patients enrolled in clinical research so this can be thoroughly studied. And then we also look at the access to treatment. We know that early intervention when there's dementia is also a very key and important role when you think about the progression of the disease.
So when you talk about dementia, I thought that was something that progressed on its own. It's not something that you could slow down or stop. Is that not the case?
There are treatments that you can slow down and stop dementia. As you know, there are different types of dementia.
Okay.
Most people are very common with Alzheimer's. There's dementia could be caused by prior strokes and other things, vascular disease. But Yes, there are treatments and methods, and we know lifestyle, you know, not smoking, exercising regular. There are things that we can do to help reduce our risk for dementia also. And so that's why I'm a big proponent on preventive health, especially for our communities.
Well, we've heard all kinds of things. It has to do with Black people's diets. I don't know if that's the case. It's drinking sodas, eating a lot of processed foods. It seems like the medical community kind of grasps at things when it comes. No offense to you, but I'm just trying to figure out, is there anything other than access to care, health care, which is a big thing, is there anything else that's across the board that, you know, maybe we could do to help prevent that in the Black community?
It's prevention, right? Okay. It's the prevention and the control and the management of your diabetes. It's the prevention and the control of your hypertension and taking your meds so you don't have a stroke. And it's the prevention and control of all those two things, which can also lead to chronic kidney disease and all those other morbidities and disease states that we suffer from more commonly that can contribute, right, to that. And so, again, that's why prevention, compliance with your meds, and doing what you can do optimally for your own personal health are so important.
It alarmed me because, you know, although you're in Dallas, I'm based out of Baltimore, and the highest numbers of dementia in the cities, with Baltimore being one of them, and Miami-Dade County, Florida, and the Bronx, New York. What does that come from?
So when it came to those cities, so we knew when, you know, the East and the Southeast had higher rates of Alzheimer's dementia. And then you're right, Baltimore City, Miami, some of it had to do with aging population.
Okay.
That was a big year for Baltimore. Also, Black and Hispanic populations, another large contributor when you come to it. But what I hope we can walk away from getting that information from that study is that there are going to be resources, allocation, and more research into why.
Okay.
Right? We know some of it, right? We know some of it when you talk about Black communities and other healthcare issues. But we really begin to dive in and now really begin to have another elevated conversation about the why.
Okay.
Exactly, because you know, anyone who lives in Baltimore is going to be like, why? What is it? Is there
exactly.
a water? Is it, you know, you're
right,
gonna question
right.
that. I really hope that your state health departments and all of that really work collaboratively on really getting that information out. You know, they have data, they have resources, they have some insights. You know, it took external this study to be done, but we hope that there will be answers that come back to that community to help them protect themselves.
What are a couple of the signs, and I know I'm taking up your time, but what are a couple of the signs that my listeners can look for in their grandparents or in their parents that might be a sign if they are suffering from dementia?
Absolutely. I have a really, my favorite human in the world is my uncle, and my family is going through it now. And our first bout was, you know, he got lost. Driving every day, taking care of himself, and he literally got lost.
Okay.
And couldn't get back home. And so, of course, we know that forgetfulness, that may start with just, where did I put my keys, and misplacing things, it recall. And we know we're all going to get some of that with age, but again, speaking up with it, sometimes going with that person to the doctor, making sure they're sharing, right?
Right.
Many times, it's the advocacy of the family that helps get not only diagnosis, but begin to start treatments to retard the progression of dementia. So it's very important. Sometimes you accompany those older family members to the doctor. Invaluable.
Now, this is going to be the last question, I promise you. But if I didn't ask you this, I wouldn't be doing my job. You are in one of the most stringent abortion law states in the country. How is that affecting you as a gynecologist and what you tell and do for your patients? Or is it?
It does affect what a gynecologist just for their patient here in Texas. And I think my challenge with all of this is the framework around abortion. And so it's come to a place where people ideally think of abortion maybe as just, you know how you talked about earlier, what we ideally see as a picture of who the doctor is,
yes,
but who's getting an abortion. And I think people forget how complex a decision that is.
Right.
People forget married couples sometimes seek abortion. It's not always just this black teenage girl that's pursuing an abortion.
Right.
And so I think the framework around abortion, who gets abortion, and what is abortion. Abortion is healthcare. And so I frame this in termination of pregnancy, right?
Right.
And so pregnancy can be terminated for health concerns of a baby, for health concerns of a mother. And when I say a baby, I'm talking about a baby that may not survive or has a condition. I remember had a patient that the baby was forming without a head, right? No
right.
brain,
right.
no head. We know that that is a condition that is not going to be compatible with life, but to make her proceed and carry a pregnancy all the way without allowing her the grace or the option to terminate early, it reduces her risk for cesarean, hemorrhage, and all those other complications. Because whether you're pregnant with a normal baby or not, you can still get complications of pregnancy. All the body knows is you're pregnant,
right?
Right. And so framing it in as healthcare and the nuances and the complications we as obstetricians see versus how it's simply put out, just people, we're not advocating for abortion, but we want people to have access, because what's been so limiting is the care women may need for miscarriage, ectopic pregnancies, all these other things have been mired in controversy because of the ruling. So it's very complicated here.
Doesn't sound like it's gotten any better either. That's
no,
unfortunate.
It's not gotten any better.
Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. And I'm going to call on you again. I hope you know that.
Anytime. Anything that I can do to help. I care about community. I'm looking for a healthy Black America. That is my prayer every night. So thank you for having me today.
Thank you. The new president of the National Medical Association, Dr. Yolanda Lawson. You take care of yourself, okay?
Thank you. Have a great day.
You
bye-bye.
Do the same. Bye-bye. Man, did I learn some new stuff today. You know what? You're never too old to learn some things, and I learned some things. Thank you so much, Dr. Lawson. But I know you hear the music, and it is time for the Petty. So let's give the Petty a call, see what he has on tap for us this week.
Brother B, good morning to you.
It is the Petty. It is the Petty. Good morning to you, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing just great today, Brother B.
Good, man. You sound good. You sound good.
Let me tell you something, Brother B. There's some things cooking in Baltimore, I'm telling you. Just when you thought that the Orioles were going to be the talk of the town, the Ravens does something. They do something I didn't expect them that to do.
What's that?
They signed a former number one pick, Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah,
Jadeveon Clowney. Signed the Ravens.
Yeah, but you know what, man?
Tough pass for
them. I want to get excited about Jadeveon Clowney, but he was exciting 7 years ago. You know what I'm saying?
Let me tell you something, Brother B. Every time the Ravens find some of these guys, they find a way to get some work out of them. They find a way to get something out of them, and they work well with that team.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's going to be a good addition to the Ravens. I think the Ravens got something cooking there. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the AFC in a minute. And you got excited about them because they're trying to take the spotlight away from the Orioles, who are on fire. They are still the second best team in baseball, only to the Dodgers and the Atlanta Braves, and those are the two National League teams. So the Orioles continue to be the beast of the American League. And I'm telling you, Brother B, I see them in the World Series.
Come on,
I know
man.
It doesn't sound like it's possible, but right now, tell me who in the American League can beat the Orioles.
I mean, that's a good point. That is a good point, because you're right. The two best teams ahead of the O's are at both in the National League, and the National League can't play the National League in the World Series. So you're right; one's going to eliminate the other. And so you're now that I think about it, you're probably right.
I can see the Orioles in the World Series against the Dodgers or the Braves, and I'm telling you, If that goes down, that's going to be one hell of a series.
Yes, it will be.
And I think those boys, who are a bunch of no-names, but people starting to take notice, they can play with the best of them. They have taken over the Rays. They got the Yankees in last place. They are once again the pride of the American League East. They are once again the pride of the American League.
Yeah.
Baltimore needs to be excited.
The series for me was the series against the Padres. That was the series
exactly.
for me. That was a great series. Even Manny Machado was like, damn, they grew up faster than I thought they would.
Yeah, man, he's probably wishing he would have stayed in Baltimore.
Exactly.
Yeah, he thought, see, sometimes you got to ride out the storm, brother. And he didn't ride it out. And then he's out on the West Coast in San Diego thinking, oh, my goodness, this is the team I should have stayed with. They grew. They're now a powerhouse. And even though people aren't talking about them, they're kind of saying, what's going over there down in Baltimore, Maryland, with those Orioles?
You're right. You're absolutely right.
They are hot. Now, let's talk a little football real quick.
Okay.
Let's get away from baseball. Let's talk a little football.
Okay.
A star running back who we all thought was washed up has found a team, a new team. And I'm talking about Ezekiel Elliott. Now, yes, over the past several years, his numbers have gone down. His productivity has gone down. But he's going to go somewhere where I think they're going to get a lot of use out of him. He's signed with the New England Patriots. If you know anything about Bill Belichick, he finds a way to make players shine again.
Right. I don't know anything about their offensive line since Brady left. I know they had a great line when Brady was there, not for running, but for pass protection. I don't know what kind of running line they have for Ezekiel.
Well, the thing is, Brother B, he's not going to be the premier back. But in short yardage situations, down on the goal line, Zeke will probably be the man in there.
Okay.
And he has a nose for maybe possibly getting a first down. He has a nose for the goal line. And I'm telling you right now, Brother B, Belichick's going to find a way to make that thing work for them.
Okay.
Because
okay.
as I look at it, and like I told you, I'm going to start to break down these divisions. And as I look at it right now, you talk about the AFC East, I'm looking at New England being in last place. Can you imagine out of all the years that they dominated the AFC East, they will possibly finish in last place in that division?
I am shocked that
Can
Belichick.
Can you fathom that? Because, you know what? There's new kids on the block. And I mean, the AFC, they are stacked with talent.
I mean,
you look at every division, the East, the West, the North, the South, there's talent in all four of those divisions. And it's like there's some new boys on the block in the East. I'm talking about those Buffalo Wild Wings Bills.
Right, right.
But you know what? You better watch out for those J-E-T-S Jets, because Aaron Rodgers, let me tell you something. He must be, text messaging, sending up some smoke signals. He's calling people, because guess what? Dalvin Cook has now signed with the Jets.
Okay.
All of these players are now coming to play with Aaron Rodgers. And you know what? When I looked at the Jets last year, they had a pretty good defense. It's just their offense was lacking. So now you have a quarterback that can make the offense work. You got players excited, wanting to be there. So you better watch out for those J-E-T-S Jets, because I think that they're going to be challenging Buffalo for the top spot in the AFC East.
You think
so? I mean, I'm not going to – listen. I think it's going to be a three-team race when it comes to AFC East. I'm talking about Buffalo, New York, and let's not forget about those fish, the Miami Dolphins, who has a lot of speed, a lot of talent, a nice coach, and I'm expecting them to really do something down there in South Beach. So I'm thinking the AFC East is going to be a dogfight between those three teams, and the Patriots will be pulling in. The Patriots are going to win some games. Don't get me wrong, they're going to win some games. I just see them finish last in that division.
That's crazy. I can't believe Belichick hasn't retired yet. I thought he would just retire.
It might be time for him to retire. It might be time for some new coaches to get in there and do a little something, you know what I mean? But as long as they find – I mean, New England loves Belichick. He's bought them multiple Super Bowls. They've been in the playoffs for multiple years. They were a winning team. So, I mean, Robert Kraft likes them, I guess.
Yeah, Robert Kraft's not going to get rid of them.
I don't think, unless he wants to walk away from the game, he's going to be there.
Yeah, I mean...
So briefly, go ahead, Brother B.
No, I'm just going to say, Belichick knows where the bodies are buried for Kraft, so I don't think Kraft's going to get rid of him. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he knows what's... Yeah, there's a lot of skeletons in those closets.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and we can talk about the Flake Gate, the Spy Gate, and some all other kind of gates.
Yeah.
So it's a whole lot of stuff that was going on up there in New England that Belichick is not... That he's been holding all the cards for
exactly.
years and continues to do so. So, you know, when we talk about these divisions, the AFC West... You know, unless something happens to Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City is going to be the top of that division.
Okay. Okay.
Now, I'm looking for something a little special from the Raiders this year. Maybe because it's the changing of the guard as far as Derek Carr not being there anymore. Maybe it's something about the Raiders. I have a feeling that they may be doing something a little special out there out in Vegas this year. Maybe because they looked at what the Aces have done, what the Golden Knights have done, and said, hey, we are the pride of this city, so we got to show it.
Right.
We're not going to let a hockey team or a female basketball team outshine us. So watch out for those Raiders this year. I think they're going to do a little something.
Okay.
The Chargers, they are who they are. And I really expect Denver to probably, even though Sean Payton's going out there to coach the Denver Broncos, I expect them to kind of maybe pull up last in that division.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Talking about the South, Jacksonville. That's all I'm going to say. I think Doug Peterson, the first taste of the playoffs, Doug Peterson has that team firing on all cylinders. So I'm looking for Jacksonville to be the top in the AFC South.
All right.
I know I saved the AFC North for last because that's where your Ravens, that's where they stay.
Right.
That's
right.
Going to be a tough division this year. You have talent up and down the line. I'm talking about Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati. When they play each other, it's going to be some dogfights. I don't expect any one of those teams to really sweep another team. I think it'll be a bunch of splits, one and ones. Baltimore will split with Pittsburgh. They'll probably split with Cleveland. They'll probably split with Cincinnati and vice versa with all the other teams. I don't think we're going to see a clear winner of somebody dominating that division. It may come down to week 17 or 18 before we find a clear winner in the AFC North.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
So, you know, when I look at who could possibly playoff teams, I know this is kind of early because as I've been watching preseason games, there have been a whole lot of injuries. But if you watch the preseason games, there's been a lot of players who are second and third string players looking for certain positions on the team and hopefully a spot on the team. So you don't see a lot of starters playing. You'll see a lot of injuries with starters as you have in the past. So with that being said, teams now need to figure out, hey, if my starter gets hurt, who's going to be the backup guy? And that's what they're going to need. Some really guys that just can just step in there if a starter gets hurt. And right now, your backup guys are getting hurt.
Right.
So that's something to watch. And the people are watching these preseason games are saying, oh, they're not really much to look at. Well, you better start looking at the guys who are getting hurt because they may be the number two guy. And if he's out for the season, who's going to step in his place? I think with that being said, a lot of free agents who are out there might be getting signed over the next several weeks because we're only a little less than 3 weeks away from the NFL season.
Yeah, I smell a lot of XFL guys stepping in, USFL guys
and
stepping in.
You probably are right. But you know what I saw, Brother B, because I've been watching some NFL preseason games. I think there's going to be a lot of NFL guys that will find their way in the XFL and USFL. So I'm taking down a couple of these names and looking at some of these players, and I'm thinking we're going to see some XFL and USFL players out there in these preseason games right now.
Okay.
And finally, in the NFL, and this is a feel-good story. You got to feel good about this. Jamar Hamlin returned to the field. He played in the preseason game. He went out there. A lot of love was given to him. And you got to be happy after what happened to that young man to see him back on the football field this season.
I think it's amazing and it's scary at the same time.
You are absolutely right. I'm happy, but I'm also scared for him. I just hope that, you know, they cleared on the play. He wants to play. He's showing a lot of perseverance and strength and just showing that, hey, I'm a tough guy. I'm not going to let this thing beat me. This is what I love to do, and I'm going to go out and do it. So much love and respect to Jamar Hamlin.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And even though I like to end that on that good note, it's a sour note that I'm probably going to end on.
And that's the story of James Harden. This guy is a clown. Look, James Harden is a very good basketball player. Don't get me wrong. He is excellent during the regular season. That man is fantastic. But when it comes to the playoffs, he's like a ghost. He disappears. You can't find him. You try to figure out where is he. He's nowhere to be found.
No, you're
and
right.
Now he went on. He went on public and talked about the general manager, called him a liar.
Yep.
Then he went on the public recently and said he doesn't think that the relationship between him and the Philadelphia 76ers can be repaired. And you're just thinking, what are you doing? You put yourself, you didn't opt into your contract after you found out that nobody else wanted you. So now you want to go back to Philadelphia and you say you don't want to play for that organization.
He's an idiot.
You got the head coach fired. You want to get your general manager fired. And here's the sad part about it. Yes, playing on the baseball, playing football, playing basketball, it is a brotherhood, and I understand. But you have a lot of players out there that are in his corner for really all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Look at the man. Look at what he's really done. Philadelphia will never be the same. The 76ers won't be the same. A lot of the fans are calling for him to then just get rid of him. But if they get rid of him, they're not going to get anything in return.
Yeah, he's a cancer, no doubt about it.
He is definitely a cancer. He, I respect what he did for leaving OKC to go to Houston. But he finagled his way out of Houston. He slithered his way out of Brooklyn after taking money from those teams. And then he wants to, slime his way out of Philadelphia. This guy's a cancer. I don't want him on my team. I hope they sit him for a year and don't pay him.
Not pay him?
I hope that's what happens to him. So he'll know that, hey, I may be a talented player, but I'm not bigger than the team. I'm not bigger than the organization.
Yeah. I agree with you. I got one question to ask you before I let you go. I don't want to call him a gentleman. The young guy, and I can't think of his name right now, but he was the receiver that got drunk, got in his Corvette, drove 156 miles an hour, crashed into the back of the Toyota that young lady and her dog was in, killing her, burning her alive in her vehicle. He got 4 years, bro.
You're talking about Henry Ruggs,
who was a
member of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
And who was a very high draft pick. And you talk about the slap on the wrist.
Four years for that? Can you imagine that being your daughter and dude did what he did? And you know how I feel about drunk drivers and you too. Can you imagine that happening to your kid being burned alive?
Let me tell you
something. People hearing her scream, trapped in that car, and all he got was 4 years? Come on, man.
It's tragic. And you know what? The bad thing about this, if there had been anyone else, they would probably... See, the thing is, vehicular manslaughter and regular manslaughter, they're two different categories. Now, I feel that if you take a life, you take a life. So you should be subject to whatever punishment that there is. So it's a sad case. I hope that young man is remorseful. I hope he turns himself around. I hope when he gets out, he does something good for the community and shows how remorseful that he is.
Yeah,
hopefully the NFL will ban him for life.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, he got 3 to 10 years, but they say he'll probably only serve 4. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
And with him being as young as he is, he still has enough time to come out and play. But I hope the NFL just tells him, I'm sorry, son, you
Kick
can't
rocks.
Play in this league.
Absolutely.
You know, as a matter of fact, I don't want to see him in a football uniform ever again.
Ever. It's unbelievable. Some things he just, I can't even get past it, bro. I was shocked when I saw that sentence. It was like a slap in the face.
I was as well. Well, Brother B, that's all I have. Next week, we're going to talk about the NFC and who I think might be the top of that conference.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate you, brother.
Get out of here, Brother B. Peace.
Peace, brother. Thank you. All right, you heard it from the Petty. I am so happy that he was here today. You know what? Sometimes he gets mad fired up. And I just laugh at him because I know who he is. And it's just good to hear him excited and enthused about the football season upon us. And certainly about the Orioles. You know, he left Baltimore. He was born and raised in Baltimore just like I was. And he left it. So it's good to know that he still has some Baltimore roots up in him. And he's rooting for these Orioles. We got to get him on board with the Ravens, though. And I'm sure that we can. Also very happy to have Dr. Lawson here with me today. I don't feel as silly as I thought that I might. I mean, I don't feel bad. I knew some stuff already, but she confirmed it for me and then taught me a whole bunch of other stuff. So I hope you guys learned some things today and that, guys, if you've been listening, you can be more patient and empathetic with your women when they can't do what you want them to do because of their physical situations. So keep that in mind, okay? And the other thing is I'm happy to have you. Speaking of you, please go to IG, at On with Brian Pettaway. Tell me what you think of today's show. Give me the feedback. Let me know what you think about this Travis King situation, the young soldier that ran over into North Korea, seemingly trying to avoid military justice that was going to take place here in the U.S. Tell me what you think about that decision and what you expect will happen between North Korea and U.S. relations as a result of it. Also, if you missed any of my shows, please go to voiceswired.com, tap on the Let's Talk tab. All of my shows are listed from newest to oldest, and this show will be posted on Wednesday. So please go on to voiceswired.com, okay? And listen, today is a day of rest. Don't do anything. You can sit back and you can watch the Little League World Series. They have some great games with these little kids. They exude enthusiasm and exemplify the best in sportsmanship. Watch those guys play innocent, hard baseball. Kick back, do nothing, and relax. But like I say every Sunday, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So wake up tomorrow morning and conquer the day first, and then work on conquering the week, because that's what we're here to do, is to be the best that we can possibly be day after day after day, one day at a time. Listen, I gotta go. Please enjoy your Sunday, and I'll meet you right here next week at 10 a.m. on Let's Talk on Baltimore's authentic multimedia radio experience, 1500 Radio. And don't forget to tell your friends. Download that app. Peace.